Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, June 27th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Opinion. City, Firefighters to Repair Pension Issues, by Lori Blong, Midland Mayor. For the past couple of years, the Midland Reporter Telegram and other news outlets have reported about concerns with the Midland Firemen's Relief and Retirement Fund, MFRRF. However, I don't think most of us have fully appreciated the scope and depth of the problem with this fireman's fund. I can say that for me, at the time I was elected mayor and sworn in January, I certainly did not grasp the full weight or severity of the problem. Put simply, the fund is underwater by more than $100 million and requires our immediate action and response to ensure our Midland firefighters' retirement benefits are secure. This is bad news, but the good news is that the City Council and Firemen's Fund leadership have acknowledged the problem, an important first step, and have engaged and are collaborating to execute a turnaround. Further, we are doing so with the help of the state's Texas Pension Review Board. All parties are committed to transparency with the community and desire to bring this issue fully into the light. Before discussing my proposed solutions, I want to provide a little background information and a public update on the MFRRF. Background. The fund was historically very healthy and well-funded, with some of the richest benefits in the state of Texas. Those rich benefits for our firefighters are still in place today and serve as a recruiting benefit for firefighters. But the funding structure and investments have begun to decline in the last 10 to 15 years. This puts the fund's solvency into question. This deficiency was identified by the Texas Pension Review Board in Austin. In November of 2021, they requested a meeting with the MFRRF board leadership and discussed the need for an intensive actuarial review and forensic audit, as well as the need to employ an investment consultant. The previous mayor and council strongly pushed for quick response and cooperation at the time that the PRB identified the need. After various delays, by the end of February 2023, the MFRRF received a full forensic audit, a full governance audit, and an updated actuarial valuation. These documents, along with input from the Texas Pension Review Board and consultants, have provided a framework to make corrections to the fund. I became a member of the governing board when I was elected mayor. The governance of the Midland Firemen's Relief and Retirement Fund is directed by its board. This legal structure was legislatively established under the Texas Local Firefighters Retirement Act, TLFFRA, in 1989, and is proportionally consistent for similar funds across the state of Texas. In Midland, it is a 7-member board, with 3 of the members elected from the fire department, 1 member being the mayor or mayor's designee, 1 member being the city's director of finance, and 2 additional members elected by the 5 aforementioned members. Accordingly, the Midland Fire Department has historically maintained a majority on the board. Findings of audits and reviews. The 2 audits and the actuarial review were extensive, and their reports are available to the public. Allow me to summarize the actuarial findings from a letter received by the board on June 7, 2023. Notably and importantly, there was no finding of malfeasance. But there were multiple governance, investment, and funding problems, which led to the decline of the fund. Specifically cited, they identified, in no particular order, benefit design deficiencies, high amounts of overtime due to understaffing, lower investment returns than assumed, changes in actuarial assumptions and inertia by the previous Board of Trustees. According to the most recent actuarial valuation, the fund value is $91,653,825. This is unfortunately underfunded by $109,123,112 relative to the current obligations to those who are either already retired or are currently employed by our Midland Fire Department, page 7 of the actuarial valuation. This is a staggering dollar amount, and we are committed to transparency with the Midland community as we work with all available support to come to solutions. It is inevitable that a problem of this size will require a long-term solution and will require multiple steps in order to fully resolve. Current solutions. The MFRRF has already taken significant steps to bring about positive change. Some of those changes have included the successful completion of all the required forensic audits and actuarial reviews, a new investment committee, a new policy committee, a successful RFP, and search for a new investment advisor who is in the process of being hired, and ongoing cooperation with the Texas Pension Review Board. All of those things are strategic and critically necessary for the health of the fund, but will not of themselves improve the underfunded nature of the fund. The first two items of significant change to funding and benefit are set to be voted on by the Midland Fire Department in July 2023. These would remove unscheduled overtime and change to calculating their benefit from the highest consecutive pay periods rather than choosing the highest non-consecutive pay periods, as is currently done. These two items, as well as any future plan changes, must be voted on by the active members of the MFD per state statute and cannot be made by City Council decision. But they are critical to begin reducing the unfunded liability of the fund. We are thankful that the firefighters are taking a leadership role in addressing this effort. The next item of change will be to the investment strategy, in partnership with the MFRRF's new investment consultant. The board is committed to high-grading the investment strategy and optimizing returns as quickly as possible. This is already in the works. Additionally, we are pleased to report that the fire department is staying more fully staffed than it has in years. Some turnover is inevitable, and we work to limit it as much as possible. But Chief Blumenauer and other city leaders are working effectively to keep staffing levels up. Future solutions. After discussions with the actuary and a couple of other consultants, and conversations with city management and council, it is our goal to pursue a plan to reach 80% funded liability initially, an acceptable level for most similar funds in Texas, and then work our way toward 100%. The path toward 80% funding should be viewed as a cafeteria plan of solutions, each of which will slowly move us toward our goal. There is no magic bullet, but we can make significant improvement even between now and the end of the year. Other future potential solutions, beyond the firefighters' vote in July and the new investment strategy, may include increased incremental contributions from the city and possibly from the firefighters in each pay period. We will also review and consider changes to the benefit structure and other potential solutions which may be brought to us by the professional consultants who are advising us. This Thursday, City and Firemen's Fund leadership will once again go to meet with the Texas Pension Review Board to discuss our progress and future plans. Once we have worked with our consulting firm to address some of this low-hanging fruit in the next few months, we will come back to the community to give a report of how we are progressing. We will also update you about other proposed solutions at that time. We will host a joint press conference with the City Council and MFRRF Board at 2 p.m. Tuesday at the Bush Convention Center to provide additional information. We will not shrink back from solving the significant problem we face with the fund, but we have lots of hard work ahead. It will require ongoing transparency, community support, and the partnership of our firefighters as well to address structural issues that contributed to the state we find ourselves in today. As I lead you through these challenges, you have my commitment to remain focused on finding solutions rather than engaging in finger-pointing or distraction. Though solving the problem is daunting, I take comfort in knowing the community of Midland is up for the challenge. For if there's one thing I know we all agree on, it is this: we absolutely must care well for our firefighters and their families. This article is entitled Animal Services Discussion on City Council Agenda by Stuart Doreen. Those with issues about the City of Midland's Animal Services Division will have the opportunity to address the Midland City Council at Tuesday's regular meeting. The last item on the agenda allows for the Midland City Council to discuss policy matters related to the City of Midland Animal Services Division's operation of the Midland Animal Shelter. The City Council may consider and take action upon a motion regarding said matters. The item was placed on the agenda by at-large Councilman Dan Corrales. There have been plenty of people from the community, including those from rescue and other animal organizations, that have addressed the Midland City Council during recent months. Topics have included the dismissal of former Animal Services Director Ty Coleman. Corrales on a Nextdoor.com post stated, "I have placed this item on the agenda for productive discussion. I look forward to our community expressing their concerns and communicating to Council the policies they would like to be implemented." The Midland City Council meeting is slated to begin at 10 a.m. Tuesday at Midland City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Street. This article is entitled City of Midland Press Conference Regarding Fireman's Pension Fund by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. At 2 p.m. Tuesday at the Bush Convention Center, the Midland City Council and the Midland Firemen's Relief and Retirement Fund, MFRRF, will hold a joint press conference to address the status of the MFRFF and an action plan moving forward. Background. The Midland Firemen's Relief and Retirement Fund board structure was legislatively established and is proportionally consistent for similar funds across the state of Texas. The MFRRF was historically very healthy and well-funded, with some of the richest benefits in the state of Texas. Those rich benefits for our firefighters are still in place today, but the funding, structure, and investments have begun to decline in the last 10 to 15 years. After requests from the Texas Pension Review Board, the MFRRF hired an outside firm to conduct audits. The findings of the full forensic audit, full governance audit, and an updated actuarial valuation can be viewed at midlandtexas.gov/firemenspension. The audit and review findings, along with input from the Texas Pension Review Board and consultants, have provided a framework for the MFRRF to make corrections to the fund. The press conference will address the audit and review findings and current solutions, as well as future solutions. This article is entitled, Council to Decide on $1.172 Million for Winlands Park, by Stuart Doreen. The Midland City Council will decide on agenda item that calls for a total project cost of $1.172 million to replace the lighting at Winlands Park in central Midland. City officials stated, with the future plans of new baseball fields to be constructed at Reyes Mashburn Nels Park, additional lighted soccer fields will be in high demand. Three of the existing lighted fields at Reyes Mashburn Nels Park will be removed to allow for the construction of the improved baseball facilities. With the addition of lighting at Winland Soccer, MSA plans to utilize the fields for weeknight practices and additional tournaments. Outside of the soccer season, additional lighted practice fields for other sports are being requested. Musco's buy-board LED lighting price is $1.065 million and includes all engineering, technology, materials, freight, crane, installation, and 25-year warranty. Staff requests an additional 10% to cover any unforeseen costs related to the installation that may arise. Total funds requested for installation of lights at the fields is $1.172 million, according to the City of Midland agenda packet. The City of Midland noted Winlands Park soccer fields are used extensively by Midland Soccer Association, who provides recreational soccer for Midland youth. Regular league play and the annual Turkey Shootout Tournament are held on these fields during the spring and fall soccer seasons. MSA is seeing organizational growth each season as their number of participants is increasing at a rate of approximately 200 players each year, city officials noted in an agenda document. This article is entitled, Father and Stepson Found Dead at Big Bend National Park, by Mercedes Cordero. A teenage boy and his stepfather died Friday at Big Bend National Park, according to park officials. Big Bend National Park's Communications Center received a call at about 6 p.m. Friday requesting emergency assistance along the Marufo Vega Trail. A father, 31, and his two stepsons, identified as a 14 and 21-year-old from Florida, were hiking the Marufo Vega Trail. Temperatures at the time were 119 degrees. The 14-year-old boy fell ill along the trail and lost consciousness. The father departed the scene to hike back to their vehicle to find help, while the other brother, aged 21, attempted to carry his brother back to the trailhead, according to park officials. At about 7:30 p.m., a team of park rangers and U.S. Border Patrol agents reached the scene and located the 14-year-old deceased along the trail. At about 8 p.m., during the search for the father, officials found his vehicle crashed over the embankment at the Boquillas Overlook. He was pronounced deceased at the scene of the crash. The Marufo Vega Trail winds through extremely rugged desert and rocky cliffs within the hottest part of Big Bend National Park. No shade or water makes this strenuous trail dangerous to attempt in the heat of summer, according to park officials. Big Bend is currently experiencing extreme heat, with daily highs reaching 110 to 119 degrees at low elevations and along the Rio Grande. This incident remains under investigation. There are no further details at this time. This article is entitled, Ken Olson to Manage Horseshoe, by Ben Schaffer. The Midland County Commissioner's Court approved the hiring of Ken Olson, 4-1, to be the county's horseshoe director. Olson, the former managing director for the Midland Community Theater, has a diverse range of experience in the event, venue, entertainment, and management field, according to Midland County. County Judge Terry Johnson was the only county official to vote against the hiring of Olson. However, Johnson believes Olson has all the tools and experience to be successful as the county's horseshoe manager. "I think the person the court selected will make a fine director of operations at the horseshoe facility. I was not against the person selected. I just had a different candidate in mind for the position that I believed would facilitate a change in the business model in the operations of the horseshoe. I look forward to working with Ken Olson on the good things to come for the citizens and taxpayers of Midland County in regards to their use and enjoyment of the horseshoe facility," Johnson said. Johnson was the county official who facilitated the termination of Midland County's contract with Horseshoe Hospitality Services, the management group owned by Joe Kelly, who was operating the facility on May 8th. On May 9th, Joe Kelly's attorney sent a letter to Johnson and the county that stated Midland County was not allowed to terminate the contract the way they did. Johnson soon after approved an official job description and opening for a horseshoe director, a Midland County employee. On July 14th, there is a mediation session scheduled between county officials and Joe Kelly to continue legal discussions regarding the contract termination. This article is entitled, "Man Dies in Collision on State Highway 158," by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. A Midkiff man died Sunday morning after a collision on State Highway 158, according to the Department of Public Safety. DPS reported that Jose Arturo Martinez Garcia, 32, was driving a 2020 Chevrolet Silverado on State Highway 158, 1.5 miles east of Midland, where he failed to control the truck's speed and struck the trailer of a 2013 Kenworth truck with trailer from the rear. DPS reported that Martinez Garcia succumbed to his injuries at the hospital. The accident happened at 2:56 a.m. The fatality is the 22nd reported inside Midland County this year, according to Reporter Telegram records. This article is entitled, "MISD Introduces New Police Chief," by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD didn't just hire a law enforcement veteran to oversee its police force. Carlos Ortiz is a father of two soon-to-be Midland ISD students. Ortiz was introduced Monday as the Midland ISD police chief. He has 27 years of law enforcement experience, including work with the Department of Public Safety and Border Patrol. Ortiz is also a Marine Corps veteran, having received multiple awards and commendations. But he told those in attendance at the Central Administration Building that he will have a vested interest as the father of soon-to-be students at Great House Elementary and Abel Junior High. "It kind of magnifies why I took this job," said Ortiz, whose wife Brendy is a Lee High School, now Legacy, graduate. Midland ISD brought together leaders from other law enforcement entities in Midland, including Midland Police Department Chief Seth Herman and Midland County Sheriff David Kreiner, to help vet the applicants. Ortiz and Midland ISD Superintendent Stephanie Howard both addressed the need to work closely with other agencies. Howard also reminded those at the press conference of the district's plan to expand the force by 16 additional positions by the end of 2025-26 school year. Ortiz will replace Arthur Barclay, who resigned in May. At the time, Midland ISD stated, "It is in the best interest of the district to reevaluate the leadership of the Midland ISD Police Department." A culmination of events led to this decision. Ortiz, a graduate of Stanton High School, will make between $103,896 and $143,473, according to the Midland ISD Compensation Manual. "There are some challenges, obviously," Ortiz said, "but I think we're ready for those challenges. I'm here to get that job done, because the safety of our children, our faculty, and any visitor on any campus is paramount." Ortiz said he doesn't see administrative barriers that will prevent the Midland ISD police force from doing its job effectively. Ortiz and Howard stated Midland ISD administrators operate under the Student Code of Conduct to handle discipline and behavioral issues, and the Midland ISD police force operates under the Penal Code. "We don't tell them what to do," Howard said. "They don't tell us what to do." But again, as the chief referenced, when it rises to the criminal side, then of course they're going to be involved, and there'll be actions in addition to the Student Code of Conduct. There'll be consequences that may become criminal consequences. This article is entitled "National Weather Service: Monday Cools Down to 110 Degrees. By Stuart Doreen. For the second straight day, the National Weather Service reported a high temperature at or above 110 degrees. On Monday, the high was 110 degrees, according to the NWS, which also reported that the streak of consecutive days of 100-degree temperatures reached 12, and the streak of 105-degree temperatures reached 8. The 100-degree streak is expected to continue through at least Friday, according to the NWS. Monday's weather, high temperature 110 degrees. Record for June 26th, 112 degrees, set in 1994. Normal high for June 26th, 96 degrees. 100-degree notables. Consecutive days of 100-degree temperatures, 12. Consecutive days of 105-degree temperatures, 8. Last 8 days. Monday, 108 degrees. Tuesday, 109. Wednesday, 111. Thursday, 106. Friday, 108. Saturday, 108. Sunday, 111. Monday, 110 degrees. Next 5 days. Tuesday, 108 degrees. Wednesday, 105 degrees. Thursday, 102 degrees. Friday, 103 degrees. Saturday, 99 degrees. Most consecutive days at or above 100 degrees at Midland International Airport. June 16th to 29th, 1998, 14 days. June 7th to 20th, 2011, 14 days. June 15th, 2023 to the present, 12 days. June 30th to July 11th, 1964, 12 days. July 14th to 25th, 1981, 12 days. Most consecutive days at 105 degrees at Midland International Airport. June 25th to July 3rd, 1994, 9 days. June 19th to the 25th, 2023, 8 days. July 9th to 15th, 2020, 7 days. June 14th to 19th, 2011, 6 days. July 3rd to 7th, 2016, 5 days. June 18th to 22nd, 1951, 5 days. Hottest days in Midland. June 27th, 1994, 116 degrees. June 28th, 1994, 114 degrees. August 26th, 2019, 113 degrees. June 26th, 1994, 112 degrees. July 2nd, 1989, 112 degrees. Note, 8 days, including June 21st, 2023 and June 25th, 2023, tied for sixth at 111 degrees. Source of this article was the National Weather Service. This article is entitled "Pfluger Talks Justice System, Hunter Biden," by Ben Schaffer. Congressman August Pfluger discussed the first 6 months of a Republican-led House of Representatives and America's two-tier justice system at a town hall at the Bush Convention Center on Monday. Pfluger said he was sure the audience members had questions about America and its future. "Whether there's two tiers of justice, you have questions on whether or not our economy is going to get back to being strong," San Angelo Republican said. "You have questions on what our kids are being taught in schools." Pfluger then detailed the first 6 months of the Republican-led House of Representatives. The Republican Party holds a slim majority in the House, but Pfluger said the 15 votes that it took to elect current House Speaker Kevin McCarthy made the Republican aisle of Congress stronger. "That allowed us to say, yes, we can have internal disagreements, but we're going to come together and it's going to make us stronger in the end," Pfluger said. House Resolution 1, the House Speaker's top priority, according to Pfluger, was the Lower Energy Costs Act, which was passed in March. "We passed a bill, House Resolution 1, that said we will drill for oil and gas here. We don't need a president to go to Saudi Arabia. We will produce energy here," Pfluger said. "We will lower the cost of energy because we're going to absolutely unleash the power that this community, Midland, does." On top of lowering energy costs, Pfluger said House Resolution 1 will allow permitting reform. According to Pfluger, Republicans, as well as many Democrats, voted for House Resolution 1. Pfluger compared McCarthy's House Resolution 1 with former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's House Resolution 1, a bill regarding mail-in voting. Pfluger went on to discuss the Parental Bill of Rights, which states, according to Pfluger, that parents have the right to approach their school board and figure out the lessons their children are being taught. "We want to reaffirm that the federal government doesn't control your children. You, as parents, control your children," Pfluger remarked. The Secure the Border Act of 2023, House Resolution 2, was the most comprehensive border security bill that Congress has passed in decades, Pfluger said. Pfluger met with local law enforcement prior to the town hall, and he said they shared that the Midland-Odessa area is a hub for human trafficking. "They're coming through El Paso, they're coming between ports of entry, and this is a hub," he said. HR 2 says, yes, we're going to go back and build the wall. Yes, we're going to go back and build technology. Yes, we're going to add 3,000 new Border Patrol agents. Outside of congressional updates, Pfluger emphasized a two-tiered justice system in America. "I don't want to wake up in a country where we see some people treated one way in our justice system and other people treated another way," Pfluger said. Pfluger on Hunter Biden. Pfluger said President Joe Biden was in the same room with his son as Hunter demanded payment and threatened a Chinese businessman over the phone, and has since received millions of dollars of payment. "Not only was that businessman sending Hunter Biden, in that case, $5 million, and there are 17 LLCs that were established that they know about. This businessman's bank account was linked to a Chinese Communist Party equivalent of the CIA head of China," Pfluger said. Pfluger questioned the services Hunter Biden was providing the Chinese businessman. He said, "Access to the big guy, President Biden, could have been the reason for the exchange of payment. It is because of that slim Republican House majority, according to Pfluger, that certain documents regarding Hunter Biden and foreign involvement have come to light. I am worried that the two-tiered system of justice to which we have multiple people, including U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland, has been compromised at the very highest level of our country. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist on this. I am looking at the facts, Pfluger said. In addition to foreign involvement in domestic affairs, Hunter Biden did not pay taxes on the received monies. If it were Pfluger himself, or a member of the audience who engaged in the same activities, quote, they would be coming after you, unquote, for tax evasion, the congressman said. This article is entitled, Pre-Howard Notices Drive Up Number of Resignations, Retirements, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD is reporting that the number of staff retiring or resigning after the fiscal year 2022-23 will be slightly above average compared to the last 8 years. In the presentation to the Midland ISD School Board on Monday, district officials showed 398 staff retirements and resignations from August 2022 through June 2023. That total does not factor any July retirements or resignations, but July is typically one of the lowest months for notices. Midland ISD reported the most notices in any July going back to fiscal year 2015-16 was 10. The data also shows an abnormally high number of retirements and resignations before January, prior to the hire of Midland ISD Superintendent Stephanie Howard. Midland ISD showed 114 notices from August through December. The most during the same time period, August through December, going back to 2015-16, was 68, according to MISD records. Going back to fiscal year 2015-16, the range in the number of retirement resignation notices was 324 in 2019-20 to 491 in fiscal year 2017-18. The average of the 8 years, including this year, was 397. The top separation reasons, according to the district, were retirements, family obligations, other educational employment opportunities, and personal reasons. The district went into the month of June with 179 teacher vacancies. The district also reported 31 notices in June. Other data provided included 55 teachers hired in May, 30 driver vacancies as of May 30th, 4 drivers hired in May. This article is entitled School Outcomes. What are they and why does it matter? By Patricia Maurer, guest columnist. On June 20th, Reporter-Telegram editor Stuart Doreen published, quote, a platform for would-be school board candidates, unquote. I kept the article, unpacked what nagged at me, and quite frankly, what should be nagging at every parent with school-age children. He asserts, and I agree, the job of schools should be about one thing, outcomes. He repeated the word 9 times, and the echo of that one word, outcomes, represents the biggest question facing schools in today's market. What outcomes are important? In Texas, outcome-based testing used to sort, grade, and rank public school students, teachers, and school districts started in 1979, with numerous iterations emerging over 35 years. From implementation of the Texas Assessment of Basic Skills in 1980, TABS, we've been subjected to 4 or more major rewrites and expansions, each moving the target and upping the stakes. Representing a veritable alphabet soup, TEAMS, Texas Educational Assessment of Minimal Skills, TAS, Texas Assessment of Academic Skills, EOC, End of Course Exams, and STAR, State of Texas Assessment of Academic Readiness, have been in the driver's seat. It's exhausting, and the outcomes questionable. Why does this matter? First, it matters because costs continue to escalate. According to a January 4, 2021 article posted by the Texas Tribune, the 2021 to 2024 contract for testing services totals a staggering $388 million. As taxpayers and parents, we deserve to know what outcomes have been realized by this approach to accountability. Who are the real beneficiaries? The testing companies or the students of Texas? Google the question of whether or not high-stakes testing in Texas has improved real student outcomes to discover 9 million-plus articles. Read 20 or more, and discrepancies from article to article make your head spin. Some articles address the question in a scholarly manner, while others celebrate a particular school choice or market a product. Sadly, even when the needle moves in favor of higher test scores, taxpayers and parents do not know what that means. What do our children know, and what can they do as a result of 35 years of testing? Results-driven accountability, with rewards and sanctions tied to the test, represents reality for students in all public schools, including magnet schools and the new generation of public charter schools, regardless of their funding sources or governance. The test drives instruction, period. The singular yardstick measuring outcomes limits the flexibility of any of these schools to craft rich and inventive programs, or to try something truly unique and possibly more effective. To justify their continued existence, they have to be focused solely on the business of the test. I grieve listening to anguished stories told by teachers, students, and parents about how public schools have changed as a result of high-stakes testing. The curriculum has narrowed to a singular focus: the primary methodology, test, practice, repeat. Explore, expand, discover, stretch, and strengthen have become irrelevant, even as those words signal schooling which immerses students in areas of interest and passion, schooling which increases students' desire to learn, and teachers' desire to be more productive and more creative. Both teachers and students are opting out, literally or figuratively. It is a tragedy of epic proportions, and the results are heartbreaking. Finally, in an article comparing literacy rates from state to state published in 2023 by wisevoter.com, we see another side of this tragedy. The ability to read and write proficiently, analyze and interpret information, think critically and creatively, use technology effectively, apply knowledge in meaningful ways, and communicate effectively with others are all factors of what is called functional literacy. The definition represents the outcome of a fulsome and successful school experience. Unfortunately, using literacy as a comparison, Texas ranks 49th when compared to other states, with 28.2% of Texans functionally illiterate. The article reports, quote, low levels of literacy cost the United States $2.2 trillion per year. And given its size and population, Texas accounts for an astonishing proportion of that bill, and the human costs are impossible to calculate. Unique demographic factors impacting illiteracy rates in Texas: immigration, poverty, English as a second language, and mobility cannot be excuses. I can't help but ask whether or not 35 years of a singular approach to education, one driven by high-stakes testing, should be enough, as it does not seem to have achieved the results we want and need. Texas can do better than this. Maybe it's time to ask a different question. What would education in public schools look like if assessment informed instruction instead of assessment being the driver? In 2018, the Walton Family Foundation reported on a commissioned study of what parents want from education. The results are striking. Parents, it seems, believe education should fit the child. The child should not have to fit the education. Parents know that the widget model of education, the assembly line approach, the singular yardstick defined by a singular test, does not account for the unique needs, abilities, and differences of children. I wholeheartedly agree. What parents want, and indeed what children need, contradicts the direction policymakers in Texas have chosen for far too long. The current testing contract expires in 2024. Teachers, students, and parents, as well as community leaders, need to become actively involved in this issue and let legislators know that enough is enough. Public school children in Texas have a right to real school choice, a network of innovative schools where teachers are allowed to put their shoulders to the wheel to create great school models, different from one another, yet responsive to what parents and students value. High-quality private schools, not stifled by the burden of high-stakes testing, have been doing it for years. That's true market-driven accountability, and the outcomes could be amazing. This article is entitled "Truck Strikes Kills Pedestrian" by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. A 25-year-old Odessa man died early Thursday after he was struck by a truck while walking on Business 20 in western Midland County, according to the Department of Public Safety. DPS reported that a 2022 Ram 1500 was traveling westbound on Business 20 in the inside lane when it struck a pedestrian who was walking westbound in the roadway. The pedestrian, 25-year-old Noe Ray Sanchez, was pronounced deceased on scene, according to DPS. The accident took place at 12:14 a.m. Thursday at Business 20 and South County Road 1305 inside Midland County. The fatality is the 21st reported inside Midland County this year, according to Reporter-Telegram records.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, June 27th. County to discuss outside transport agency. Ector County Commissioners will meet at 10 a.m. Tuesday in the County Annex to consider a number of items, including hiring an outside agency to help with transporting prisoners, and also plans for an employee appreciation event. Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett said hiring an outside agency to transport prisoners from the Ector County detention centers to other areas of the state and nation could aid the county as transport is killing us right now. He said using deputies is not as cost-effective as hiring an outside firm. The county has struggled to find enough jailers for the jail, and like all law enforcement agencies, it's difficult to keep enough deputies and jailers. Fawcett has also previously said that during coming budget talks for next year, it is imperative to raise pay for law enforcement staffing. Meetings will begin next week, and Fawcett said they are bringing back department heads and elected officials meeting with one commissioner and Fawcett prior to public hearings to hash out the details and needs for the coming year. The commissioners will also accept a donation from T-Mobile for $4,600 for an employee summer party on July 14th. This came out of our employee action meetings, Fawcett said. We need to show appreciation for employees, and this should be a great event for everyone. Fawcett is also excited about another agenda item, a presentation from CGI Digital pertaining to a free video opportunity for Ector County. He He said the free videos will be on the county's homepage and will showcase what is going on in Odessa, and it's free. We got selected, and only a few in Texas did, for this program. He said it will go a long way to showing what is positive in the community. He said folks who want to see an example of the work that CGI does can go to Hidalgo County's website and take a look. Commissioners will also consider approving an application for fiscal year 2023-2024 with the Texas Department of State Health Services, DSHS, for the purpose of providing immunization services in Ector County. The annual grant renewal from September 1, 2023 through August 31, 2024 for immunization services, and the level of funding for fiscal year 2023-2024 is $191,873. Consider approving a contract for mental health deputy services between Permia Care and Ector County. Discuss approving the purchase of Etnier ECS-250 trailer mounted crack sealer for the Odessa-Schlemeyer County Airport through a by-board cooperative purchasing contract in the amount of $68,000 from Airport Fund Special Department Equipment 042-870-5507. Fawcett said many taxiways and runways have a lot of cracks in the pavement, and that this item is the beginning of improvements to Schlemeyer Airport. Consider approving a four-year contract with Peacemaker Technologies and to designate Peacemaker Technologies as a sole source vendor and exempt the purchase from county bidding requirements. Consider approving an agreement with Verizon Connect to provide GPS services to the units in the medical examiner's vehicle through the Sourcewell Cooperative Purchasing Contract. Consider a county street lighting service agreement contract with Encore Electric Delivery Company, LLC. Consider approving a contract with EM3 Networks for internet services at the Ector County Library. New I-20 Wildlife Preserve Conservation Job Corps Program, Making West Texas an Outdoor Classroom. The I-20 Wildlife Preserve will enlarge its outdoor classroom in an entirely new way this summer after welcoming 7 Midland High School students into its new Conservation Job Corps program Monday morning. The program will allow high school students from Legacy High School and Trinity School with an interest in medicine, biology, and life sciences an opportunity to obtain hands-on experience in conservation, restoration, education, and research before entering college. The program will blend life skill lessons, such as learning to use tools, with classroom instruction and hands-on exploration and observation. Students will have the opportunity to investigate several Texas ecosystems, as well as meet with experts, scientists, and graduate students on their field trips across the state. It is our hope that the program will encourage them to learn in nature and become lifelong advocates for the lands that surround them, Wes Ferris, executive director of the preserve, said in a news release. The I-20 Wildlife Preserve is a learning environment like no other. It is a 100-acre riparian forest campus in Midland. It serves the people of 19 counties, including Midland, Ector, Pecos, Howard, Crane, Brewster, Presidio, Jeff Davis, Andrews, Ward, and Reeves. The preserve is a wild space, not a park. The 86-acre urban Playa Lake is a highlight of the wetlands, floodplain, thickets, and prairie grasslands found there. The urban Playa Lake is an ephemeral wetland, and the shallow, clay-lined basins are a primary source of recharge for the Ogallala Aquifer. While the Ogallala is vast, it is a rapidly depleting source of groundwater that is vital to all life in the Permian Basin and across much of the county's high plains. There has never been a more important time to learn about the protection and management of groundwater. These scientist students will find incredible teachers and mentors in Jackson McAndrew, the Preserve's conservation land manager, and Evelyn Guerrero, a UT Permian Basin student doing pollinator research at the Preserve. Our students will spend the next month working and learning on the Preserve and traversing several other Texas ecosystems, Ferris added. They will take a field trip to the Trans-Pecos, where they will learn about wildlife management and native prairie restoration from Borderland Research Institute graduate students. At the Nine Point Ranch, they will learn to band Montezuma quail. No West Texas exploration would be complete without a trip to the Monahan Sand Hills, a unique dune ecosystem that is home to bluestem grass and sand reeds that help stabilize the soil in the park. The park will bloom with yellow sandhill sunflowers, a pink penstemons, bright white heliotropes, yucca flowers, and so much more. The sandhills are home to Jerusalem crickets, javelina, mule deer, and sagebrush lizard. Students will also explore forest ecosystems and meet the Caprock Task Force at Reese Air Force Base. Then they'll see seedlings being nurtured at the West Texas Nursery in Idaloo. Texas A&M University and the Texas Forest Service use the seedlings in their reforestation projects. And the trees grown there are also used in all kinds of urban restoration projects, attracting more wildlife and creating natural windbreaks on properties, Ferris said. Students will then head to the Gulf Coast in Corpus Christi. They will learn about marine biology at the Hart Research Institute. Then they'll head to the San Antonio Zoo. There they'll meet up with zoo biologists who have been working with Texas Christian University on a grow and release program of the horned lizard. The next stop is the Meadows Foundation Aquarina Springs in San Marcos. There they will learn water analysis, identifying invertebrates, and more. The group will then head to North Texas to learn about their work at the Green Space Dallas Conservation Job Corps. They will join forces with those Job Corps students and go canoeing down the Trinity River to pick up trash. Since opening in 2013, the I-20 Wildlife Preserve has served thousands of West Texans through programs in education, wellness, citizen science, and land management. This new Conservation Job Corps program is an expansion of its vision of being a living laboratory. Ferris said he is hoping that the program will continue to grow. We hope to enroll even more future scientists and nature enthusiasts from across the Permian Basin over the next few years. Their work will help preserve the ecosystems in the Permian Basin and Texas for generations to come. The program began Monday, June 26th and wraps up July 21st. Presidio woman killed in two-vehicle crash. A 35-year-old Presidio woman was killed and four people were injured Sunday afternoon in a two-vehicle crash in Ward County. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, Anna Gabriela Galindo was driving a Nissan Sentra when she failed to yield the right-of-way to a Toyota 4Runner on State Highway 18 and FM 1776 shortly before 1 p.m. Galindo was pronounced dead at the scene and three children in the car, ages 8, 13, and 16, were taken to Ward Memorial Hospital in stable condition. The driver of the Toyota, a 52-year-old woman from Grand Falls, was also taken to the hospital in stable condition. According to DPS, everyone involved was wearing seat belts.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.